Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. It's Thursday, September the 31st, and I am Verna Thomas-Milton. Welcome to the Verna's Health Foundation Metroplex Buzz. And today we have a special guest, Dr. Travis Werther. And I want to say a little bit about Dr. Werther. He is a respected executive in the Texas Juvenile Justice with over 33 years of service. He is a published author of the book, Creating Monsters or Raising Champions, and What's Wrong with These Kids. He is one of the most respected, recognized, and decorated executives in the history of Texas juvenile justice and holds the longest tenure of any administrator, having served over 33 years, with 25 in administration plus 10 years mentoring and expert consultant to cultural diversity, mediating race relations, and youth violence. Travis has received over 100 awards and has appeared on national TV and radio programs. He is the founder also of the Wortham Group and is an excellent speaker. And I want to say thank you, Dr. Wortham, for being my special guest today and for coming in and being our guest here on Verna's Health Foundation Metroplex Buzz. Thank you for being my guest today. How are you?
Yes, ma'am. It's my privilege. I'm doing well. Just standing on tiptoes of anticipation for this show and where we can go with it.
Well, I tell you, this show is heard all over the United States. And in fact, I just told my nephew in Florida, they had a big a rainstorm or something down there in Florida, but he didn't get any of that. I want to tell him, I said, I've been praying for him and his wife, Miguel Booker. He is from Destin, Florida, which is in the panhandle of Florida. So I have a lot of guests that's listening all over the world today, and I'm so thankful for that. So if you would, come kind of tell us a little bit. I can tell people about you. I mean, I want to tell people. I can tell people more about you, but I want to kind of talk with you about really who you are. You serve on so many boards and commissions, and some of them that I see with you was the vice chair of the Dallas Police Review Board. Also, with the Texas Justice Juvenile Diversity Task Force, you was chairman, culture chairman for that. And there's so many more, Rainbow Bridge. Tell us a little bit about what you want us to know of who you are.
Yes, ma'am. Well, first of all, I'm a servant of God. When I wrote this book, I made it real clear to several publishers. Actually, there was a few of them that suggested that I had a few too many scriptures in the book. And I told them after thinking about what they said, I think I'm going to add a few more. Because I wrote it for him, to honor him and bring him glory, and to bless the people of God. For 20-plus years, I have anguished over getting a book done that will go at the heart of what is happening with our children and our family in this day and in this time. So I am just tickled all over for what God has inspired me to do in writing this book. And yes, I've been a in just about every capacity you could imagine in the community. Spent about 60 years working in the civil rights and civil liberties movement. I've marched with Jesse in D.C. on the FBI building with so much crap going on across the country. And, yes, I did serve what we looked at police shootings all over Dallas. And Dallas was per capita number one in the nation of shooting its citizens. And primarily citizens of color. So I was heavily involved in that and rose to the rank of being a vice chairman of that effort, and we were part of that group that got the Justice Department to come down and investigate the Dallas Police Department because of some of the wrongdoings that we saw going on within the system and just a lack of some things is just weren't present, and we needed to be present so that would be equity within our systems, whether it having to do with how people were being stopped for crimes, whether it was about how they were being treated in courts. And one key thing that we've done these last couple of years during the pandemic, we started a project called Banking Below 30. And that had to do with how people of color were not getting loans for their businesses and churches and nonprofits. So we met with the three governing bodies and all of their top executives, the Federal Reserve, the OCC, and the FDIC. And we challenged them on their regulations for how they monitor banks in their lending practices. And the good news is they've made a lot of changes. My spheres of influence are children and family, working with the homeless, going into prisons and working with folks in prisons and those coming out and doing what we can to share the good news of the gospel and change in people's lives.
And you know, I noticed when I was reading a little bit about you, you talked about how when you did the show with Dan Rather, The Kids Who Kill, and participated in the radio station, you was also on that about addressing the youth violence and issues. Dr. Wortham, you used to have a facility. I don't know if you still have your facility here in Dallas. But that facility was one of the number one facilities, and it was the top facility in the state of Texas juvenile justice system. And the students that, I mean, the children that was incarcerated there, that was locked up, didn't even want to go home almost because they enjoyed their stay. Could you tell us about your role there with the Kids Who Kill that you talked about with Dan Rather,
as well as
yes,
your facility,
right here,
where
they was here.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, Dan Rather was doing a nationwide effort. You may remember some years ago, they'd have about a 3-minute bleep on the news where they talked about key issues. And I was selected, and the facility in Dallas was selected as one place that he would get information from, because we had become the go-to facility in the state by the state's top brass, where when a kid was getting close to be released from a secure lockup facility, but they weren't just ready to be back in the community because there were still anger issues, aggression issues, explosive issues, et cetera. Well, we became one of those go-to facilities because we were designed to handle it. We tried to create a facility that wasn't designed for a certain type of kid, but rather we created one that any type of kid, any type of issue that was needed, we would be able to intervene with that kid in those circumstances and began to have an impact on those kids. Now, I have to tell you, one of my tricks was, one, I always recruited people that loved kids. Two, I did get me a few ball players, some football and basketball players. At least they used to be anyway. So they were also some sizable guys. And the goal was not to hurt kids or strong-arm kids. The goal was maybe if you see what you see, you won't even try some of the stupid stuff that kids do. Even though we spent our time in relationship building goodwill with kids so they would be more inspired to change. And we made a lot of difference in a lot of kids. We were the first who created so many different programs in the state within the Texas juvenile justice system. And we did that simply out of working with kids and families, understanding what their needs were, understanding what they were going back to and the circumstances. And sometimes we did not send them back to those homes because the homes were such a detriment to those kids being successful. So we were able to help them to get jobs, put them in apartments, or get some other kind of a living arrangement and assignment so they could move on to be very productive citizens.
Okay. Well, is that still existing today? Do you still have that today?
No, unfortunately, that facility closed within years after I left, partly because they were receiving sex offenders. And a elementary school came in, though we had been grandfathered in that location. You can imagine sex offenders being in an immediate area where there were elementary kids in the vicinity. That didn't stand too well. So they were able to move kids to other locations so they could better serve them and not place elementary kids at risk.
I see. Okay. Well, one of the things I noticed when I was reading your bio about you, I talk a lot. You're a sought-out speaker, and you speak a lot about the youth violence and the bullying that's going on in the schools and the family service and the civil rights and civil liberties. So I want you to kind of tell us a little bit about that, about what you do there, but also why does it appear to you that kids and people in general are just becoming more violent?
Yes,
they
ma'am.
Care less about,
yes,
you know, the value of life.
Yes, indeed. Well, obviously, there are many factors that is driving this. You got social media that is grooming and radicalizing kids, and too many of them are spending too much time on things like PlayStation games where they're playing these games where they're shooting folks' heads off and blood is gushing all over the place. And then you think of the volume of single mothers raising children where there are no fathers in the home, or they're being raised in environments. I was asked a question by a reporter that made this point. What's the big deal about these teen mass murderers and 60 people getting killed in Chicago over the weekend? Mm-hmm. And I was able to, because this goes at the heart of your question, and I was able to talk about that. I said, in Chicago, what you have is horrific poverty over generations. So you have one perpetrating on another. And then they're living in dismal environments where they seem to have no way out. Poor schools, poor communities, getting into the drug business. The fathers sold drugs. The fathers were in gangs. The granddaddies were in gangs. The granddaddies were selling drugs. And then as you keep those blighted communities regurgitating themselves, one generation gets worse beyond the next generation. And that's not to say all, because obviously there are many families in poor communities that get out of those communities and go on to do marvelous things, including many of the professional athletes who came out of some of those dismal backgrounds, but were able to get out and get beyond some of those things. But the other distinction that I made, let's take these teen mass murderers. And again, this is at the heart of the question. You're getting a kid, and if you watch the news footage on these kids, and I'm talking about kids like Dylan Klebold, Columbine, 17, that kills 30, wounds 20. Nicholas Cruz, Parkland, Florida, 19, kills 17, wounds 17. Salvador Ramos, Uvalde, Texas, kills 18 years old, kills 19 children and two teachers. Now, here's part of what happens. If you watch the news footage on the perpetrators of these crimes, these are not poor kids. Most of them are white, some are Hispanic, but they come out of middle-class families. So what in the world is going on? It's not like they are dealing with the horrific poverty like some of the kids in the other communities. So here's what is happening. I'll give you a scenario. Let's say a mother and a father gets divorced. They both made, you know, had pretty good jobs, and it was a bitter divorce. And the father leaves. The father tries to get back at the mother by disassociating with the son and just totally disconnects. So now he has lost his paternal parent because of all the ramblings that's going on. And then he and the mother gets real close in that period of time because they are now the only two in the house. But eventually, mother has a boyfriend. And mother and that boyfriend becomes real tight. And the boyfriend probably does not like the kid. And therefore, the kid and the boyfriend grows distant, and so does the mother and the boyfriend grows distant. So now he has both a paternal and a maternal parent that have distanced themselves from him. And then he may be an oddball. And he doesn't fit in any clique at school. And he's ostracized at school. He's embarrassed. Maybe he's oddball in class. And the teacher tends to harass him. Then he goes on social media. And he finds the exact person ready to groom him and lure him in that will appeal to exactly the experience that he's going through. And then he may get radicalized by finding a way to get AKs and AR-15s and then going out to ranges and learning how to shoot those guns. So all of his world has crumbled, and he now wants to get back at somebody. So you have just created a powder keg of a kid capable of going to school and committing a mass murder. You think about the abuse that some fathers commit on families, and then that gets trickled down generationally. And in the book, I talk about generational spins in families where men grow up, or women grow up in certain environments, and they learn how to deal with problems a certain way, maybe out of abuse and maybe hitting, maybe getting loud and maybe cursing people out. And then that gets transferred down into his family. And then that whole situation perpetuates itself. And you know, it doesn't get better. It gets worse. And then we could go on and on talking about some of these common factors that lead. And I've got many stories in the book that are true life stories. Some of those are mentees of mine today. But when they came to me years ago, they were some of the most violent kids you can ever imagine until we were able to get in the gap and create some interventions that was able to help turn those kids around.
Okay, and that's in this book that you just wrote, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Creating Monsters Many or Raising stories. Champions. It's in Webmaster?
Yes,
okay. Where can one get this book, Dr. Werther? Is it in the bookstores or online?
It's at urbanpublishinghouse.com.
Okay, the
urbanpublishinghouse.com. And you can pull the book up on there and go straight to the bookstore to get the book and order the book. And it's in hard copy, it's in soft copy, and it's also on ebook.
Okay. Okay, urbanpublishinghouse.com.
Huh. Yes, ma'am.
That's very good to know. I am just excited for you, Dr. Wortham, because I know that there is a lot that can you can do still, you can do here in Texas that can help youth with so many problems that's going on right now. I wanted to ask you, like so many people say their children is becoming like, especially in schools, when I get these complaints from the teachers, and last year I got a lot of complaints from teachers of what, like little musters they was having in school, with how they was coming to school, what they was doing in class, and how they couldn't do anything. They couldn't put them out of class because if the child wasn't sitting there, then that school didn't get so much money, federal monies, for that child being
That's
in the
correct.
Classroom. So the teachers had to put up with a lot. And so many said they was not going back because of what they had to actually encounter with these students. So why do you think so many children today is becoming like little, monsters that is praying, that's in our schools and communities? What's happening to our families that's causing this? What are you doing?
Yes, ma'am. Well, think about all the things that have been taken out of schools. You can't spank kids anymore. You can't, if you curse them out or you say something out of place, then you can get in trouble for that. And then you have schools where the principals are not the most supportive of the teachers that in the schools, because safe schools start at the top. The principals, I mentor 7 school principals today. These are some of the strongest men I know, and they run safe schools that genuinely care about kids but don't put up with mess from kids. So if it doesn't start at the top and trickle down from all the principals and the counselors and those in authority, then the teachers are really in a situation that they cannot win. And believe me, I hear this story often that you have just described, because I deal with a lot of teachers. Now, let me tell you this about me. I am stupid enough to go into a school and ask a principal to give me 8 to 10 of the worst boys you got. And I've done it several times. And I mean that sincerely, because here's what I'm clear about. I have spent 40 years plus working with some of Texas's most aggressive, violent, and emotionally disturbed kids there are. I have learned so much about what the things are that trigger that behavior and in the intervention strategies on how to turn that around. And when I've gone into those schools, I've literally tracked kids from middle school to college. So I didn't just work with them in the middle schools. I followed them to high school, and then I followed them after high school to colleges on into adulthood. And the good news is the things we were able to do, most of those kids went on to do wonderful things. Now, there was always those few that I don't care what you give them, they just had a mind of their own, and they were going to go in that direction to where they were going to either end up in prison or they were going to end up dead, one of the two, because of the mindset. But it has to do with the environment that the school set. And as I said, I've got 7 principals. You won't find foolishness going on in their schools. And it starts with the family, obviously. And if you don't get the cooperation, because schools and families should be partnerships, and I tell parents all the time, don't assume that your kid going to school, every teacher is going to like him and love him, or every principal. You have to be involved, you have to be engaged, and you have to have a rule with your children that it's not okay to go up and disrespect anybody in the school. And you have to be in partnership with everything that's going on. We can turn this thing around. It's being done. I am currently involved with schools, community groups, folks working with gangs, folks working with youth groups, folks working with men coming out, men and women coming out of prison, and we are making a difference in so many different ways. We can turn this thing around.
Well, I tell you, I used to be in law enforcement, and I know there's ways that it can be done. And I know I don't like to see lives lost. I'll just minds wasted. And what do you think, for instance, you said you just talked with seven principals. What do you have in plan? Do you have a plan of action for this school year to help these youth? They may have some mental problems as well as coming from homes that's abusive or just don't care, you know, what the kids is doing. They, you know, they don't mind. In fact, some of the kids don't even see parents. And because when they go home, the parents is not there. And either they're working or they don't see them until nighttime. And the next day they're on their way to school. So
yes,
what,
ma'am, to answer your question. Well, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yes, to answer your question, number one, I'm already connected to multiple groups that are working with young people in different pockets of the Metroplex here in Dallas. And I'll give you a few. There's one called Youth Believing in Change in North Dallas. They literally have buses that go to schools and pick up kids after school or go into large apartment complexes and pick up kids and take them over to their facility, and they work with the kids in terms of homework, tutoring, providing meals, provide recreation, and then giving them food to take away from there back to their homes. And then there's a place over in Oak Cliff. Matter of fact, it's interesting you even asked this question. Just got off the phone with a gentleman about a couple of hours ago. They're getting ready to start something at Southwest Mall. You know, there's a lot of new facilities going up, a lot of buildings going up there. Well, they're getting ready to start a major project where you're going to be able to bring kids to. And I told him tonight, you can count me in. I'm going to be involved. Where parents can literally bring kids to, drop them off in the evening, and some of the same stuff go on. And we're going to be building character in kids, okay? And then there's another program over in South Dallas called Cornerstone, Cornerstone Baptist Church, and Cornerstone Foundation, Pastor Chris Simmons. Simmons is doing – I'm sorry?
No, I just said right. I'm all with you. I understand Pastor Simmons. In fact, I just talked with his office yesterday because we are nominated. We nominated him for one of our Living Legends for next year. So I support him totally.
Yes, ma'am. And see, and they are not only working with the kids down the campus, they are going into the schools. They got about 20 schools that they go in the Metroplex, working with teen girls who are pregnant, providing diapers and how to care for baby classes. And then they have all the facilities as well where girls can literally come and live if they don't have housing. So my main point to you is, we want to go in as many schools as we can And there are people that are ready to go in those schools. And you know what our issue always is, lack of funding. But we are working on that right now, too, because we're trying to identify. Matter of fact, last week I met with a congressman over in Rockwall, and they're wanting me to put together about a page and a half of any of the projects that I'm involved in and about how much money it would take to affect those projects in the community. And they're going to pass that on to people that they're connected to who literally have grants that may fit that project that we don't have to pay back. So we're working on all kinds of things all the time. And by the way, I don't know if you know, the Texas legislature just approved a bill that becomes effective tomorrow, where we not only can have counselors in schools, we can now have chaplains in schools. So chaplains will come from a lot of the people in the community who are already out there doing the work with the kids. So they won't just be spiritual counselors. These will be people that will be able to work with kids and confront some of their behaviors and be able to provide some interventions for those kids in the school. So that goes into effect tomorrow. And it is a paid position, by the way. So if you got anybody who's interested in becoming chaplains, including yourself, you may want to consider that.
Okay, okay. You know, Dr. Wortham, let me share something with you. God is so good. You know that guy you're talking about in Rockwall? That congressman person? I've met him.
Ma'am.
I know who you're talking about. But I also senator. Yes, sir, but I have a senator who has worked with you, too. He sends me grants every week that people can actually use. So we're going to get together after this event is over. But I want to just take a time out, sir, because I have some people. I have a lot of people listening in. Now, if they want to ask a question, if you have a question for Dr. Wortham, please hit number one. All you have to do is hit number one on your dial. I see you called in, but if you have a question for him, hit number one, and I will see. I will catch your call. I will see who you are. I want to shout out to my cousin Anthony Brody. He's calling from Kentucky. I see him online. I want to thank you, Anthony, for tuning in tonight. And I have Bree and Lovey in California. They are texting me. They're online and from California. So I want to let people know this is heard all over the world from the East Coast to the West Coast. My nephew, who's in Destin, Florida, he listens to it with his church members there. So I'm just thankful that we have this podcast, because not only are you helping Dr. Wortham, Dallas, DFW area, but you're helping other people to get ideas of how they can help themselves, you know, and how they can help their communities, because God is everywhere. We have a spiritual connection when we love the Lord. We, regardless where you are, we have that spiritual connection to try to help one another. And like when we get off this airways, I need to talk with you and send you some information, because I'm the only one who don't have no grant. I probably need a grant, but I am the only one that don't have a grant. But let me tell you something. I want to thank my board members. I love my board members, because they're always behind me and they're putting up with me. You know, Dr. Wortham, we've been in existence for over 40 years of working in the community. 40 years we've been doing all of this. But, you know, we have an executive board with Lisa Frazier from Concord. She knows you from Concord. Windsor Barbie from Concord. She knows you from Concord. We have Yvonne Grant. You see what I'm saying? And Yvonne is not from Concord, but Lila Clay, Zella Richards, and Giselle is with the Volunteers of America. Dr. Ronnie Shade, he's up there by the new mall, Southwest Mall, that they're fixing to do. He does a lot of work with them. And we have Fred Walker. Fred Walker is one of the big brother who works with Dr. Cynthia Meekins' group. So we have them on our board, along with a fantastic advisory board, and there's so many of them that if I start calling names, I might miss one, but we have a legal clinic, some pro bono attorneys that always work with us. When we have our legal clinics, and one of them is Judge Dominique Collins. I have to shout out to her because she's always there. She's our moderator. And if you ever need us to help,
she already has my book.
She already have your book, but I know she
yes,
do
ma'am.
Because she's but she is
book.
She's very concerned. We have Attorney Russell Wilson, Candace Haley, Bree West, Victor Landers. Victor's over there with Paul Quinn now, Audrey Moorhead, and Attorney Jimmy Angelino, and Attorney Cheryl Watley. These are the people that's on our legal clinic, and they participate for pro bono every time we ask them to come out to the community. They help all people, everybody. So I want to really shout out to them. I want to shout out to my church, Mesquite Friendship, for allowing us to have that facility anytime we need it. So Mesquite Friendship Baptist Church. So I want to thank them for that. So this is just, I'm just trying to show people the appreciation that's really works with us all the time. Linda Henderson, who's on with the Henderson's Fried Chicken, and Linda, Miss Linda's new restaurant in Fort Worth. They're part of our advisory board. Her and Sonia's husband, Dennis McCleary. Linda's husband, I forgot his name, Dorian Mallory, and also Patricia. Mm-hmm. It's just some. She's always on my podcast, Patricia McLemore. I want to thank her because I see her tonight. She's online. She's always there online. She's always there to help us out. We have the State of Texas, Mark Romney, on our advisory board. Okay, he's the stake leader. Tommy Young West, Lynn McBee, Reverend Mark Hernandez, Tricia Harris, Hilda Dark, and Levi Davis, Isabel Cottrell. Sandra Clark. If I don't call their names, I know they're going to get mad at me, Dr. Ramsey. I'm calling everybody else's name. I know they're going to get mad at me. We even have
I know about half of those that you named.
I mean, yeah, and we have Jack Beckman. You know, Jack Beckman is the one that put those. He have all those cattle right there on the corner of Lamar. He and Clamor Crow did that. Those statues there, a long time ago. I forgot what they call that. It's a plaza they call it.
They had all these
cowboys. Huh? You've seen
statues.
It before?
Yes. Yes.
Yes, yes. And I want to shout out to my podcast producer who works with me, Seth Turner. That's my nephew also, y'all. So I just want to thank all of y'all for being online with me, putting up with me. And for 40 years, they've been with me an awful long time, especially Lisa and Yvonne. They've been with me for 40 years. And Isabel Cottrell, too. They've been with me for 40 years in what we do in this community, and I'm so thankful to them. So I wanted to say all of that, and I want to also thank my husband, Reverend Arthur Milton.
Yes,
he's also my my pillow when I'm weak, and he makes me a little stronger. Sometimes he get on my nerves like all husbands do, but that's my husband for 34 years. 34 years, Dr. Weatherman, I've been married, and I'm so very thankful
praise
to God.
God.
Yes, sir. Yes, believe me, it's only by the grace of God.
Yes.
And, you know, I mean, marriages can last. So I kind of want to give you a little idea about who we are. And
yes, ma'am.
Also, I have also online, I see here we have Dr. Dorian Mallory. He's with Miss Linder's Kitchen. So I think that's him wanting to say something. And Dr. Wortham, let me just take this call. This call is coming in from area code 940-4095. Go ahead, sir. Are you on the line?
How you doing, Mrs. Melton? How's everything?
Hello, Mr. Dorian. I'm just fine. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm doing wonderful. I'm sitting here listening to your wonderful podcast. And we want to thank you, Ms. Vernon, because we want to have this message out to the streets and to everyone that needs to get it and receive it. And I want to thank you for supporting your people and being there for us at every time we need you there. I can't wait to see the Vernon Melton Health Foundation be consolidated and put forth an effort to help our people and help what we have going on. Thank you so much for getting behind us and believing us and trusting us when nobody else do.
Thank you. Thank you, Dorian. I appreciate that. And I thank you for all of y'all.
Amen.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Dr. Wortham, and, you know, and Linda, Dorian is also the husband of Linda Henderson, who is owner of Henderson's Chicken. And the young girl the lady who helps the pregnant women, she's with the Bowler House. Okay, she's a big contributor to the Bowler's House. So I really am very thankful for Linda for being there. She's helped a lot of people in the South Dallas area and a lot of nonprofit organizations. And I'm just very thankful. Dr. Simmons, Chris Simmons.
Hold on, Ms. Vernon. Hold on. Somebody right here for you. I had to go get her. Hold on, Ms. Vernon. Go ahead, Pat.
And Ms. Vernon.
Okay.
I would like to say.
Hello.
Thank you. Hi. How are you doing tonight?
I'm
like
just fine. Is this Ms. Henderson?
Yeah, it's Linda.
Linda Henderson's Mallory. Yes, hi.
Hi, Ms. Verna. And I also wanted to say something to Mr. Travis Wortham. He always is a supporter. He and his family always would come by Henderson Chicken and purchase food from him. And I've missed seeing him, but I want to thank him for his patronage, for, you know, his support all these years and how he's done such a remarkable job in our community also with the Texas juvenile system. And we appreciate you. I just wanted to say something to you, at this last minute, because I missed hearing a lot, but you have contributed so much to our youth.
Thank
into
you
that
so
system.
Much.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
That's
well, it's time for me
to
come
say.
Back and get some chicken.
Whenever you get a chance. But we'd love for you to come out to the Euless location. It's called Mrs. Linda's Soul Food to Go. Please come out sometime, you and your family, and eat with us. And that's in Euless, Texas.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
In fact, I wanted to thank my alumni, MLK Kirkpatrick High School. It was in our newsletter today, and I've gotten some calls on my cell phone. I had to quiet my cell phone because people is listening online. And I'm asking them also, Linda, to come to your place. That's closer to Fort Worth. And I know they will love Miss Linda's soul food to go. So I'm going to get over there myself. And Mr. Wortham, she has some good soul food from what I can understand. So we're going to.
Well, I am a food connoisseur, so I can make it. And Linda, you and I are on Facebook together too, by the way.
Absolutely, yes, we are, Mr. Wortham.
Okay.
And Bernard, can I say this too? While Linda's on the phone, one of the things I am doing is getting people to buy cases of my books, so that we can put those in the hands of folk who are just getting out of prison. And I'm going even beyond that. I'm telling them if they will read the book and share with me what they've learned, we're going to find some kind of gift to give them, because the book is about restoring their favor with God by doing things God's way.
Yes.
Yes. Well, we'd like to get some of those books.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
And you know,
well, if y'all can leave a way for me to reach you, I'm at 214-399.
Mr. Weather, hold on. I will give Linda your phone number. Because, see, this is going all over the United States. And I just want to make sure you don't. I mean, I'll give Linda them your telephone number and how they can contact you. Because one of the things that I don't want to do, because I have, the reason why I'm telling you this is because, like, we had GSA on, and he gave their telephone number out on the airways. Everybody in the United States started calling GSA, and they clamped, and they actually had a they had a problem with that. So a young man, he'll be back on next month. But what I'm saying, I just don't want to put that out right now. I can, unless you want people to call you like that. If you don't mind, you can do it, but I'd rather...
Not on that scale. Not like what you said.
Well, what I'm saying, that I can give it to Linda them, yes, because what I'm saying, I just want to make sure you kind of keep your... This is your private number.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I just don't want it to get out like that. And so we'll give it
Thank
out
you.
To Linda, but they can always go on... Do you have a website or email address?
Well, I have an email address, and it is Travis, T-R-A-V-I-S, dot Wortham, W-O-R-T-H-A-M, at ATT.net.
ATT.net. Okay.
Yes.
Very well.
Travis.Wortham at ATT.net.
Okay.
And thank you for your protection, Verna.
Ms. Verna.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
Ms. Verna, I have a challenge, Ms. Verna. It seems like, you know, the African-American women are coming and they're strong and they're doing what they're supposed to do. They're supporting their families, things like this. But when I look around, Ms. Verna, I see no African-American leadership in men. I see no man stepping up. The only one person I see is Charleston White stepping up. So I'm tired of seeing these men pushing around these $300,000 cars. And I have a new challenge. I want to see who's going to step up and be the next greatest black leader for men.
Dr. Wortham is one of them.
We have no black leaders out there.
Okay, well, I'm going to share something with you.
I can sure respond to that if it's okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Number one, I'm associated with many groups, men's groups, who have made the commitment that you've just described, that are working with men coming out of prison while they're in prison, men in the community, in various pockets of the Metroplex. I've got a group in North Dallas. I've got a group in Lancaster. I've got a group in Pleasant Grove at the House of Prayer. So there are pockets of men that are already doing what you are describing. What the problem is, folks don't know about it.
Right.
But there's surely collaborative efforts going on. And we're getting ready to do something out in Southwest Mall.
Location. Can you give us a little bit more, some more locations and information of it?
Yes, sir. Is that okay to go ahead and give it? One of them is called Rod Ministries, R-O-D.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And then, of course, you know, Pastor Chris Simmons. I'm sorry.
I was looking for the contact.
Let's do it this way. Why don't you give him my phone number, and he and I talk? Because,
okay, I will give
Yeah, I can give more details because I probably won't have all of them right in my face at this moment anyway.
Okay. Well, let me ask you something, Dr. Wortham. You wrote 4 chapters in your book about men. Okay.
Yeah.
More than about any group contributing to the breakdown of the families and things like that. But why was this all this told about the men?
Yes, ma'am. Well, because men are the heart of the family.
Mm-hmm.
It's God's order. And anytime we take it, remember, family is God's idea. And if it's going to work right, it has to be done God's way. And he put men as head of the household. And we have allowed our authority to be usurped. And, of course, we've also been absent. Some of us have been abusive. Some of us have come from abusive families. And abused people tend to abuse. And then there's some of us who've gotten caught up in the criminal justice system, not so just, more of an unjust system. And we have got to get back to reclaiming those men. And that's why many of us are going inside the prisons and talking to men and restoring men to God's favor, not only while they're in there, but when they get out. And if they are staying in some of our programs in prison, we can help them to get housing, get jobs, and get restored to the families once they come out. So I'm telling you all, this stuff is going on right now. Just many people don't know that it's happening. So we're doing a lot in this regard.
Well, you also, in your book, you talk about scared from the start. Well, now, what does that mean when you talk about this in that book, scared from the start? Is that talking about the young men that were scared before they went to prison? Or what is that about?
I'm going to give you a quick story that's in there that goes right at the heart of the question. A young lady who's one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen, and I mean the model type, she shared, when she found out I was writing this book, she wanted to share her story with me. And here's her story. She was abandoned by both parents, who ended up being drug addicts. She's doing pretty good today. She was involved with this guy that became her fiancé. He took her within inches of killing her. And he didn't know that she wasn't dead, but because she passed out when he left a major gash in her head from an assault. That is part of the stuff that's coming out of that chapter. And what it means in significance to this is she saw all the signs of him being possibly violent early on. But he was this brother that kept selling this idea that he was this strong Christian and he loves the Lord, he goes to church and this and that. And she said shortly after they started going together, she found out he never prayed during a meal. And one thing after another, she tried to get him to go to church, and he would never go to church. So scared from the start means too many couples see all the signs right up front, and they ignore the signs for many, many reasons. Sometimes women feel they're getting up in age, and they may be getting beyond the childbearing years, so they get desperate. They find what looks like is a decent man, but end up having one of those rascals that they should have never been involved with. And so what I talk about in that chapter is make sure you are what the Bible claims as being equally yoked, in what you believe spiritually, equally yoked in how you care about each other, how you respect each other. Equally yoke in your drive to be better as a human being or your career to see that you all are going in similar directions, your ideas about how to raise children, how to discipline children. All of those dynamics need to be in place. And I've counseled some married couples and I've counseled some premarital couples. And what I've learned in much of that process is they saw all of those signs, they ignored those signs, and they ended up with a fool that cost them their kids or caused somebody to kill one of their children and et cetera. But it could have been stopped right up front. So that's what that chapter gets into.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, and also I want to ask you this too. What are some of the drugs that you think that the deadly drugs that is being abused today by so many children, and why?
Well, you know, the number one that's in the news is the fentanyl. And you know that if you've ever seen the Mentos candy, the colored fentanyl looks close to the Mentos candy. All different colors. Now imagine someone walking into elementary school, open up their hand, and what looks like is Mentos candies, and they ask kids, would you like to have one of these? And here's what you need to know about fentanyl. It's 50 times stronger than heroin, and it's 100 times stronger than morphine. Now, that's the one that they are designing all of the laws and rules around. And you know the Texas legislature just approved a bill. If a kid dies from taking fentanyl and you are the drug dealer, you are the one that gave it to him, you could literally spend life in prison. Now, let me talk about a couple of other ones. Heroin, of course, is back on the scene. There's a new thing that they're doing called Spizzerp, and that has to do with, Sizzerp, or what they call the purple drink. And that's where they are mixing NyQuil, the cold medicine, Sprite soda, and Jolly Ranchers. And they mix
what?
That together.
Now, what did you say again?
It is called
repeat
Sizzerp.
What you just said? NyQuil and what?
NyQuil, Sprite soda, and Jolly Ranchers. And they mix that together, the Jolly Ranchers, to give it better flavor. But here's what they're doing. They're pouring the whole bottle of NyQuil in a glass, fill it up with Sprite, adding to it, and then they add the Jolly Ranchers, and they mix it. And what they're getting is, now think about that, you take a couple spoonfuls of NyQuil if you have a cold, if you're dealing with some type of physical situation. They're taking the whole bottle. And it can not only slow the heartbeat, it literally kills you. And then, of course, you know, you got all the other ones. You got the mass, and you got the K2. And you know the K2 looks like potpourri. And the problem with K2 and the marijuana that's out here on these streets today, and you know there's a term they use with the marijuana when they're dipping it in certain drugs, especially something like formaldehyde, they call it getting wet. And what these things are, what they're doing is they're making the drugs more potent than they ever were. So the problem with kids using even marijuana these days is they don't know what's in the marijuana. And they can crystallize fentanyl and put it in a joint. And the next thing you know, you may be dying because it only takes, now think about this with the fentanyl. If you think about a few grains of salt, that is all that it takes to kill someone who takes fentanyl, because it is 100 times more potent than morphine, 50 times more potent than heroin.
I didn't know all of that. I did not know all of that. Well, those are the most deadly drugs then that one can take, and to know that fentanyl can kill a person like that, I didn't know that.
One pill. There's a slogan out right now: one pill kills.
Well, what I'm going to do is that. I know we have more minutes to go, and I just want anybody that may have questions for you to press the number 1, if they have a question for you, if you're calling in, you can always just press number one. And we can see that your hand is up and to ask Dr. Wortham any question that you may want to ask him. But Dr. Wortham, also, I have some more questions here that people is actually texting me in, too. And one of the things that they're saying that can turn these things around. Okay, what practices that can turn these things around and help parents raise the children, the champion children that you talk about in your book?
Yes, ma'am. And you know that's one that I'm just tickled all over about because I interviewed so many parents who raised phenomenal kids when I was writing this book. I wanted to know from the time that child was in the womb to adulthood, what were some of their practices? And here are some of the things that came back. One, some of the parents, the mother said, they played classical music when that baby was in their belly because classical music has something to do with triggering that part of the artsy part of the brain that gets kids going when it comes to math and reading and figuring stuff out, logical reasoning, and et cetera. And, of course, we got to put God back. Families don't work without God in it. Families, the idea of family came from God, and it only works if we do it God's way. Here are some other little tidbits that came back. Eating meals around the dining table. Now, we also want to have a mother and a father in the home. God had a plan for having a mother and a father in a home. And I say this all the time. A woman cannot teach a boy how to be a man. A man cannot teach a girl how to be a woman. God has a place for both, and he put us in families for the different purposes. And that's not to say that there aren't some single mothers that raise some good kids, because they are. But when you look at the larger numbers, it doesn't work out so well. And I was about to say, having meals around the dining table, several meals a week, because here's what that does. One, we get a chance to talk about family issues. We get a chance to talk about what's going on with kids at school. We get a chance to talk about any rivalry conversations going on between the kids. Not only that, in the process, we get a chance to teach them about self-control, about how to deal with conflict resolution and mediate while we're having those discussions. Having those family meetings in your living room where we're able to talk about some of the issues going on in the family. And I caution parents all the time, always include your children in identifying activities that the family want to go on, whether we're going to travel somewhere, whether we're going to go to a museum, whether we're going out to a lake. Have them involved because that gives them some of that self-worth that they start beginning to have right up front. And another thing I am high on, teaching kids to work at early ages, starting with doing chores in the house. Everybody can do a chore. And I remember there was a time when my family and the kids, as we were growing them up, and my family when I was growing up as well, that was a certain day of the week, and y'all know what I'm talking about, where everybody was involved in cleaning the house. And that meant everybody in the house had some ownership as to cleaning the house because it's everybody's house. And therefore, they needed to be involved with that as much as anybody. And here's one that is really at my heart, teaching kids about compassion. And I don't mean just talking about it. You got to take them out. Take them down under the bridge and let them see you and let them get involved in feeding the homeless. And here's one of the best examples that I love to tell about our daughter. I just picked up from school one day, and it was raining and it was very cold. And we went to a Wingstop. She was one of the trainers for the sports teams. And we just stopped there in transition after school. we saw this homeless couple, at least they appeared to be homeless, standing outside of the store. They refused to go in, and you could tell they were shivering and cold and et cetera. She and I ordered our meal, and then I left. I said, baby, hold on for a minute. Let me go catch that couple. And I found them. Mm-hmm. Brought them back into the store, got them a meal, gave them some money, pulled off my raincoat that I had on and gave to him, and I went in the restroom. And when I came back to the table, my daughter was boo-hooing at that table. And here's what I discovered. I didn't try to even console her. Here's what I discovered. Out of all the years my wife and I had taught our kids about having compassion for others, none of those years together measured up to that moment that she experienced with those homeless folk. Those things matter in our family. There's a guy by the name of Dave Ramsey. He teaches a series on how to save money, how to invest money, et cetera. We need to be talking to our kids about finance, about financial literacy, and that's something we're doing right now with fifth graders in a school that I work part-time with. We teach financial literacy, money management, and owning a business at a building called the Gilbert Reed Technical and Career Center on George Bush. But all of these are things that we have to engage kids in. And when I talk to principals who had kids that weren't doing too well in schools, what they all said is one thing you do with those kids, whatever subject matter they're struggling in, double their homework and give them more practice in doing that one area that they have not been very good in. And obviously that may come with tutoring and hiring tutorings and single moms raising children. And we know they've got to put food on the table. We know some of them have a job and a half. Some of them have two jobs. But one thing we're trying to push forward is having two jobs. Paying the bill matter, and we get it. But is having two jobs and not being present for your children worth losing your children, because paying later is much more expensive than paying now, where we sacrifice and we spend that time with our families. And I am after men being engaged with their children, with their wives, and in their family. And one thing, and I make this as a last thought, one thing I'm sharing with women: be careful. There's a subconscious thing that happened with women when it comes to men, and it's this. Maybe your husband was a sorry husband, but you know he was a pretty good father. You all divorced, and you are driving wedges between your the father of your children and the children. And the thing that we don't realize many times is this: when you are driving that wedge between your ex-husband and your children, what you may not know is it could be a jealousy streak that stems from the loving father-daughter relationship you've been chasing all your life that you never caught up to. And you are jealous of the relationship between your daughter and her father. Careful about those kinds of things.
May I ask a question, Ms. Vernon?
You know what, Mr. Werther? We have one person on the line, and he is asking. I thought I had muted all these numbers, but no, his number is not muted. But I was going to call him up next. Yes, sir, you can. Mr. Werther, we have one and want to ask you a question. Go ahead, Ms.
Yes,
Mallory.
Dr. Worthy, I hear you, and I hear your traditional views and things of that nature. And the question that I want to ask is, we're growing up with a generation that seems to be excluding traditions, and they're not paying attention to the traditions we're growing up. And it's a kind of two-part question. How do we reach them and also the children that don't have parents? There's about 20% of children without parents. that are falling through the system. They don't have foster care. They don't have assistance, and they're making it the best way they can, living in flop houses and doing things like that. What would be your suggestion in reaching those children?
Okay. I'm going to answer that several ways. One, I've got a call out to the churches. I just met with a National Pastors Convention. I spoke before them, and I spoke about the content of the book. And I was talking to them about what the church can do. Because as I talk to a lot of young people, especially those going to college or in high school, one of the things they tell me, and I don't know if y'all heard this statistic or not, 50% of kids who go to college, who used to go to church all the time, was raised in the church, they don't go to church when they get to college. And here's what they say. Church is no longer relevant for us because the way the church is reaching its membership, it is not geared towards reaching young people in the church. So, number one, I said earlier, there are groups already going on that are working with young people like you have just described, and I work with several of those groups. I got men in an arsenal, man, that is ready right now to go into schools, go into communities, and as a matter of fact, I don't know if you heard me share it earlier, we're about to start something over at Southwest Mall, where parents are going to be able to bring kids and leave them in the evenings. And then I have a friend in North Dallas who's got a after-school program, and they literally take their buses into the large apartment units and into the schools and pick the kids up after school, and they work with them in the homework, and they're recreating with them. They're teaching them about Christ. They're feeding them. And we're trying to create more pockets of that around the Metroplex. Y'all, let me be real clear about this. There is an answer to what is going on with our kids, and I'm trying to align myself, because I'm an older guy, I'm trying to align myself with more of these younger brothers that are out here already in the war, and they are working with some of these teenagers and these young adults, helping them get out of the gangs, the whole gamut. I don't know if y'all know Antoine Lucky. He just wrote that book, A Redemptive Path Forward. And he was a gangster and drug dealer. Man, he's got a phenomenal program down there on Botham John, where the brother was killed by the police officer. Well, they got a building down there.
Right.
And, man, they're meeting with all kind of folks down there, young people. And so I'm saying to you, there are pockets of this going on around the community. The word has got to get out more where they are located. Armin Rashidi, he's doing some work over in Arlington. Got a big group of kids going on over there, man. So people may need to reach out to me through my email, and let me put you in touch with some of the folks and what's going on. Now, I do provide life coaching work, so I only work with boys, though, older boys and young adult men. And that's my choice because as a counselor, you got to be careful about working with females or cross-populating with the opposite sex. Now, I have an arsenal of women that I can refer young ladies to or young adult women to as well. So, man, answering your question, we got a lot of what you're asking about already going on. And my one of my main answers to you is we need to use more of the young people, the college students, the people in their 20s, in their 30s, because they are closer to the ages of a lot of the young people that you are describing. And they're going to be more willing to listen to them than they are to us. Now, I tend to stay around a lot of young people, and I learned a lot of their lingo. Matter of fact, in my book, I write a section on social media where I'm educating parents on what some of the acronyms mean when they're looking on their cell phones so that they'll be more educated about some of that stuff. And let me just say this about the book. I wrote the book in this form. One, I wanted to educate parents and give them a blueprint on how we can do a better job in raising our kids well. Two, I wanted those parents or adults who've been going through stuff, who still have some demons and some ghosts from their past that they have not resolved. So when you hear some of the stories in this book, lady just told me this past Sunday. She said she was buying the book for her daughter, her grown daughter. She said she got to read in the book, and she couldn't put it down because she now is identifying what happened in her marriage. And she's gaining some insight about how to forgive and move forward. So I wrote the book to include those kinds of things. I'm not the expert. The Bible is the experts on family. But what I did is created some practical application that will go with scripture so that folks no longer need to say there's no manuscript that comes with raising children. I disagree. The Bible is the manuscript. But now I've given you some practical that you can use and read. And I want everybody, before they get married, I play with folk all the time when I run into couples who get about to get married. I said, y'all bet not get married. And matter of fact, you make him read this book and tell him you ain't going to marry him until you read this book. Because I really focus so much on us men and the demons that we have that we got to get resolved.
Now, that brings me to my second question, Mr. Word. The way I hear you sounding and the way you're describing things, it sounds as though your middle income, upper middle income, maybe even higher than that. So on a poverty level, there's a rumor going around that churches are receiving grants and so in order to stay out of minority community events or things that's happening, and that's why we're not seeing a church in our impoverished communities as much. Is this rumor true? Are the churches receiving governments to stay out of black issues and not help the minorities?
Number one, my first reaction to that, I don't know that is to be true. I have no idea about that. Now, here's what I will say. Many of the foundations that work with communities choose not to take government grants. And they choose not to take those grants because of all the strict guidelines that come with them. So we're a little careful about some of those. Now, the good news is, and sometimes this is extremists that are coming up with these ideas, but it may be for the wrong reason. But they are conforming more to supporting programs that are spiritually based. So you're beginning to see a lot more of that coming to unfold. But you're right. That has been a part of the problem in the past.
Sorry, say that again.
I'm sorry?
Say that again. What did you just say? I was right.
Well, yeah, no, what I was saying is I don't know what you asked. I don't know that to be true. But I do know that there are more grants that are coming through that are not having so many restrictions tied to them to where you can't talk about God, you can't talk about religion, and et cetera. And that has been the norm. And that's why so many people did not even choose to apply for those kinds of grants. And we got to turn that thing around because we know that's part of what's at the heart of what's happening with our children. If we can't talk about God, if we can't talk about morals and values and teaching kids those things that are going to help them to survive out there, well, we've already lost the battle. And we are, and I know a lot of folk right now, a lot of men in particular, and women, who are men involved in a lot of work trying to help turn kids around. And we can do what you're describing, and maybe you and I need to talk another time because there are things going on, and I need to make you aware of them.
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm thinking about Antoine. Mr. Wortham, I did, I text you both of their telephone numbers. And also,
okay.
I've texted Mr. Mallory your information, your telephone number. So he has that.
Okay, and you gave it to Linda as well, and her husband?
Yes, yes, and you have her number too. I gave you hers.
Perfect.
So what I want y'all to do is get together, you know, after the night and talk about it, because this is something that I think this is like urgent. We need to do all what we can to help one another to save
our
children.
Let me tell you this. I'm already connected to pockets of groups that are ready to run with this right now. So we just need to get together, and then I could easily, and I have several venues that I'm allowed to have any kind of meetings that I want all over the Metroplex. I mean, I have relationships with people like that. So I'm telling you right now, including Skyline Ranch, the owner of Skyline Ranch is one of my best buddies. So we've already been meeting on some of these issues. So we can do that. So let's just get together and have an initial sit down, and we'll take it from there. You're going to be surprised of all the stuff that's already going on.
Well, no, I'm not. I know that, you know, Mr. Wortham, you know, the only thing I know that I prayed a lot for children. I pray a lot for, you know, I know what we're going through. I know what we've been up against.
Yes, ma'am.
This pandemic and how life is so short, and how, you know, when I saw the Creflo Dollar video, how he was attacked by the pandemic, and how he had COVID, then after that he had the shingles, and after that when I saw how this man of God was almost pulled down, you know, we have a lot of, you know, the devil's not only after the adults, but he's after our children. So we have
children are number one. Satan is after the children more than anybody, because that's the next generation. If he can get the kids, then the society is over.
Oh, yeah. But you know what I want to do is shout out to Mr. Antoine Lucky, you know, because I listen to him every Sunday when I'm on my own. And this Sunday, I had to just sit outside the church and look. My husband was wanting to know, where's my wife? Because I normally go to Sunday school, but I was outside in the car listening to you, Mr. Lucky, taking your number down. I said, I got to have this guy on my show. So, you know, I was so happy to hear that, to hear you and him on Sunday's show. I didn't know what to do, so I tell him I said hello.
And
I thank God for his show and what he's doing in the community.
As a matter of fact, I'll see him in the morning. We're getting ready to do something else. Y'all pray for me.
Okay.
On Tuesday, I'm going before the Dallas County Commissioner's Court to speak. And we're going to be speaking about what's going on right now with this major investigation of the Juvenile Department on abuse of kids. And I'm hoping to be able to share the good news to help them to understand what they're going through in this investigation, what kinds of things come out of it, and how we can have a wonderful path forward in turning this thing around. I went through a major investigation in around 2010 to 11, and we had 30-plus facilities that were hit by four different law agencies at the same time for the same kind of stuff. And here's something y'all can know. The facility I ran out of Dallas came out squeaky clean, other than some procedural things. And it's not that I was so good, we were so good. It was about we loved children, we protected kids, we kept them safe, we provided resources, and we took kids to another level that they had never known before. And kids, literally, you said this earlier, stayed in some of the lockup facilities way beyond their minimum length of stay when they could have been released so they could get on the waiting list to come to us here locally because of all the resources we made available to kids and families. And there's nobody but the Lord, y'all. It ain't me. Nobody but Jesus.
Well, but we're going to try to have, we're going to do something together, Mr. Wortham, to keep those resources available to the children now. Not only to the children to help them, but to help them grow and want to learn and get an education. And better than what they're doing, what they're going through now. We have to give them hope. we have to do something to give them hope. So I'm going to get with you after this and talk with you about different things and people that possibly can, I mean, congressmen and senators that possibly they can help us and
okay.
that need to help
us. Yes, ma'am. Well, let me tell y'all something that you'll want to know. When you get me, you get an arsenal of all of my resources. One of the beautiful things that God has blessed me to have over the years is relationships with subject experts, gangs, drugs, sex and human trafficking. By the way, we have a big sex and human trafficking deal coming up. Is it next month? I think it's in September. At a church over in the Park Cities area. And y'all need to be invited out to that because you need to hear how kids are getting trapped in this sex and human trafficking. And the speaker is going to be phenomenal in that presentation. So you get an arsenal of resources when you get me. That's all I'm telling you.
So in September, this church that they're going to be speaking at, you're going to give me the information on that?
I will give you the information. Yes, ma'am. They're still finalizing everything, but you're going to get everything that I got going on, okay?
Well, next month.
You can
month,
put it out there as many people as you want.
Okay. Dr. Wortham, next month, I have dedicated next month to business. My business, I mean, in fact, we have four big agencies that's going to be on every Thursday of next month. One is coming from SBA. One is coming from the APAC group, which is also a new government agency. One is coming from GSA. And the other one is from SBA Veterans. Now, what we do, and the reason why, Dr. Wortham, I really and truly know that I'm being blessed because I love helping other people. For 30 years, before I got as old as I am today, I was a government vendor. And I learned as a government vendor, you can have contracts for 5 years, 20 years, if you got a GSA contract. So I'm trying my best to let people know about the $649 billion worth of set-aside businesses that is out there for small businesses. So
yes, ma'am.
When I say that, is that I wish I was much younger than I am today because I could possibly go back out there and get more. I can't do that anymore because of the fact I don't travel to New York or I don't travel to Atlanta like I used to. But there is a lot of opportunities out there for small businesses. And so we try to teach them. What I do is try to teach them what I know about how to start a business, how to get involved with the government, how to get their contracts from the government. You're talking about 2,000-some agencies. Department of Defense got so many other agencies. The Department of the Army has so many. So what I did was next month in September, I will be able to announce about what's going on that you have going on, Dr. Wortham, and anybody else that may have something going
on.
We can be able to announce it. But my guest for September will be the different agencies that I have asked to come on. And we're all set for September. They're all ready to go. And SBA got so much information to share. So I am just excited that they want to be a part of our podcast. Not only will this podcast be heard in the DFW area, but it'll be heard all over the world. So I'm not only helping our people here in DFW, but I'm helping so many other agencies or so many other people in different cities. So I'm excited about it. I thank God for it. I thank God for just allowing me to have this podcast because I know I'm helping somebody. They may not get a big contract, but they may get some contract, a small contract to get them started. So I just want
thank
to be
you.
Able to help somebody. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, ma'am, and I really appreciate what you've just said because it matters. You can imagine I deal with so many groups, and they are always scratching the surface just to survive, oftentimes using their own personal funds to just stay alive. So we need to know as much about what you are talking about as anybody, and I got so many groups I could bring together to hear the information that you're talking about, and I'm definitely going to be tuning in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I thank you for that. I really do. And I just want to thank you, sir, again, Mr. Lucky, with the urban, what is it called, urban development that he called his agency?
Urban Specialist.
Urban Specialist.
Urban Specialist.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, and they're on every Sunday morning. All these
knuckleheads nobody want to work with.
Well, he's
and
on
also,
every Sunday
Armin Rashidi.
Morning. Okay.
And don't
and they're
forget,
on,
don't
a, what
the
is
name.
It, 105.7? I think it's 105.7
yes.
on Sunday morning.
Yes.
So if y'all want to tune into that, tune into that, because that's how I learned what I learned from him and was able to see you. I mean, to hear you, I'm sorry. But we have, I think, 5 seconds to go. So if you want to have the closing remarks, Dr. Worthen, you may. But I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, from the board members of the Vernon's Health Foundation. We thank you for coming on. And I got to have you back on again. And I really wish you could come to my church. Let me tell you all something.
I
have a
come to your church.
Let me tell you something, Dr. Worthen. Let me tell you, you and your wife, I want y'all to come. I mean, I'm having a birthday on September the 9th. And September the 9th, that's on a Saturday. But let me share something with you. That Saturday is I have reserved for my family. So that Sunday is when I'm going to celebrate my birthday. But I ask everybody to come to my church with me. I mean, come visit with me at my church. And after that, then we're going to have dinner after the church. But my church is Mesquite Friendship Baptist Church. I am so proud of my church, my pastor, and my church friends and leaders there. So if you want to come to join us on Sunday, September the 10th, that's when I'm celebrating my birthday. I'll be 74 years old. Did you hear what I just said? I'll be 74.
Yes, ma'am.
Happy birthday.
And by the grace of God, I'm still here. By the grace of God,
ma'am.
I am still here. So I've invited my family from Fort Worth, my classmates and everybody to come. So they're going to probably scare my pastor because he don't know I'm doing all of this. But anyway, but nevertheless.
Any opportunity you can make for me to be able to come and even share at the church. I'm really using a topic on saving our families. I talk about the book, but I'm talking about more of the dynamics of returning and restoring the family to God's idea of what family should look like.
Okay. Well, my pastor, too, a founding pastor, he wrote a book about the black families as well, Dr. Terry Turner. I don't know if you know him or not, but...
That name sounds familiar.
I would love for you to meet him. Love for you to meet him.
I look forward to it.
Okay, all right, sir. Well, listen, I want to tell everybody, thank you all for joining us tonight, and I am so thankful that we had a good show. Okay. All right.
All
thank
right,
you,
thank
sir.
You much. All right. Talk
okay.
to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Keep on.